In September 2021, I found myself in a Phoenix suburb, searching for a woman who had developed severe chemical sensitivity after battling her airline employer. People with such conditions often retreat to the desert's dry climate, away from the mold and chemicals of populated areas. When I finally found her, she spoke briefly but devastatingly. "My life was ruined. My liver is damaged. My heart is damaged. I'm dying." She was among hundreds of Alaska Airlines attendants who fell ill from toxic uniforms in 2011, and thousands across multiple airlines suffering similar fates. This investigation into toxic fashion has become a cultural phenomenon, with celebrities like Emma Watson and Stella McCartney championing sustainable alternatives. The book has sparked industry-wide conversations about chemical transparency, with the $2.5 trillion fashion industry finally facing scrutiny that food, beauty, and cleaning products have long endured. As we wrap ourselves in fabric daily, could our clothing be slowly poisoning us without our knowledge? Flight attendant John's health deteriorated dramatically after receiving Alaska Airlines' new polyester wool uniform in December 2010. Within days, he developed severe rashes and breathing difficulties, landing in the ER with a $4,900 bill and a misdiagnosis of bedbug bites. By February 2011, industrial hygienist Judith Anderson began receiving reports from flight attendants about severe reactions to the new uniforms. Anderson discovered the uniforms contained tributyl phosphate, a chemical used in hydraulic fluid and textile manufacturing that can cause skin problems, respiratory issues, and potentially disrupt hormones. Despite Alaska Airlines' attempts to downplay the situation as individual sensitivity, attendants like Mary developed debilitating symptoms, including rashes, migraines, cognitive issues, and severe allergic reactions. When Anderson had the uniforms tested at the University of Washington, they identified 97 chemical compounds, including lead, arsenic, cobalt, antimony, restricted dyes, toluene, and even carcinogenic hexavalent chromium. Anderson uncovered the apparel industry's alarming reality. Outside California, virtually no legally enforceable standards exist limiting chemicals in adult clothing. Instead, the industry relies on voluntary guidelines, with chemical limits rarely based on robust research, often just arbitrary guesses or industry best practices. Though most substances were below typical irritation levels, their additive effect could create greater impacts than each chemical alone. The Alaska Airlines uniform crisis wasn't isolated. American Airlines, Delta, Southwest, and others soon experienced identical problems with their new uniforms. Each time, attendants developed rashes, asthma, and debilitating fatigue after switching to new uniforms with water/stain repellency, anti-wrinkle, antifungal, and anti-odor properties in bright, saturated colors. Flight attendants represent a near-perfect case study. They wear identical uniforms for 12-plus hours daily in controlled environments, creating clear before-after evidence of chemical exposure. Their uniforms contain the same fabrics, dyes, and treatments as mass-market clothing. The key difference? Most consumers rotate between dozens of garments weekly, making it nearly impossible to connect mysterious health problems to specific clothing items. Jacqueline lay in her hospital bed, facing an impossible choice: sign papers authorizing the removal of her colon or die as her organs shut down. Her condition resulted from years of slow, day-by-day exposure to fashion's toxic chemistry and culture, a journey that began decades earlier in her New Jersey childhood. Raised in the garment business, Jacqueline entered fashion after art gallery jobs proved financially impossible. Her career progressed from dusty design offices to production management, where she regularly opened chemical-reeking sample boxes from overseas factories. By 2012, she developed severe skin rashes, and patch testing revealed allergies to multiple industry chemicals, including azo dyes and textile coating ingredients. Despite these warnings, she continued working. It was all she knew. Her health deteriorated dramatically when her appendix burst in 2015. Professor Heather Stapleton's environmental chemistry expertise became personal when her asthmatic son broke out in a rash matching the exact pattern of his unwashed new polyester shirt. Using advanced mass spectrometry, Stapleton confirmed halogenated dispersed dyes were indeed in her son's shirt. The concern isn't just skin sensitization. When these dyes contact skin bacteria, they release amines, compounds suspected to be carcinogenic and genotoxic. Despite industry claims that toxic azo dyes have been largely phased out, the discovery of these chemicals in house dust suggests we're actually ingesting and breathing clothing chemicals daily. Kirsten Overdahl, who grew up with juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, brought personal insight to her PhD research on chemical allergic reactions. Her work revealed a shocking truth. Of the estimated 40,000 to 60,000 industrial chemicals used in the U.S., most remain untested for health effects. With only 8 lab-quality samples commercially available worldwide, Overdahl spent 6 months hand-purifying dyes and another year analyzing them. Her team found potentially harmful dyes in every children's polyester clothing sample tested. One shirt contained 300 times the EU limit for other azo dyes, and in dust from all 124 households surveyed. According to JAMA, up to 1 in 5 people experience contact dermatitis, with causes often difficult to pinpoint. Carly Hisser, a pediatric nurse practitioner, discovered her son's severe eczema was triggered by his clothing after exhausting all other remedies. Despite switching to fragrance-free products and special diets, his condition worsened until she finally realized his daily tantrums about getting dressed was his body's desperate signal. Fashion production manager Jacqueline's health deteriorated dramatically, with constant gut pain and bloody stools. At just 35, she was diagnosed with severe Crohn's disease. Her work in the fashion industry, where she witnessed factories going unpaid and faced moral compromises daily, compounded her physical decline. "The moral compromise was what was making me physically sick," she confessed. Fashion's toxic history extends far beyond recent memory, though we seem perpetually unable to learn from past mistakes. While people often reference the mercury-poisoned Mad Hatter when discussing toxic fashion history, we've merely replaced old poisons with new ones. In Renaissance Paris, 1572, an unlikely shopping expedition brought together two powerful women preparing for their children's wedding, Catherine de' Medici, the Florence-born Catholic Queen Mother of France, and Jean d'Albret, the Protestant ruler of Navarre. Jean selected perfumed gloves from Catherine's perfumer, but soon after fell ill with chest pain and difficulty breathing, dying days later. Rumors spread that Catherine had poisoned Jean with the gloves, fitting neatly into the era's fear of poisoned garments. Though Jean's autopsy revealed she likely died from tuberculosis, not poison, fashion would eventually introduce truly dangerous substances through industrial chemistry. In 1857, a 61-year-old French hatter committed suicide by drinking mercury-based hatting solution after years of exposure had likely caused physical and mental deterioration. Beaver fur hats had been popular for centuries, but as beavers became scarce, hatters turned to rabbit fur, which required mercury treatment to felt properly. Tests on historical hats found mercury levels as high as 10,000 ppm. Modern standards aim for below 0.5 ppm. Mercury use in hatting wasn't banned in Connecticut until 1941 and continued in the UK until the 1960s. Debbie recalled playing in Gloversville's Cayadetta Creek as a child, fascinated by the rainbows in the water, actually toxic chemicals from tanneries. Leather tanning has historically been unhealthy, using excrement to soften hides until chromium was discovered in 1797, revolutionizing the process. Despite its wealthy mansions, Gloversville residents suffered health problems from chemical exposure. When Debbie was young, classmates died of leukemia, and she experienced early menstruation, fertility problems, and eventually cervical cancer. As fashion production evolved into the 20th century, chemists began creating synthetic fabrics from fossil fuels. Polyurethane, PU, now marketed as vegan leather, was invented in Nazi Germany in 1937 for mustard gas-resistant garments. Other synthetics followed: nylon in 1939, polyester in 1941, acrylic in 1950, and spandex in 1959. PVC appeared earlier when Waldo Seaman accidentally created flexible polyvinyl chloride in 1926. By 1959, industry scientists privately worried about PVC's toxicity, with studies showing carcinogenic effects in rabbits. Despite this, designer Mary Quant popularized PVC in her 1963 Wet collection. While some scientists created entirely new synthetic fabrics, others worked to chemically improve natural ones. Ruth Benarito, born in 1916, began working at the USDA's Southern Regional Research Center with a critical mission: saving the cotton industry from synthetic competition. Her team discovered that dimethylol dihydroxydihydroxyurea, DMDHEU, could create wrinkle-resistant cotton without making it brittle. The problem? When DMDHEU breaks down, it releases formaldehyde, which can cause irritation at low levels and is carcinogenic at higher doses. When nuclear physics professor Graham Peasley began investigating toxic chemicals in consumer products, he discovered he could use particle-induced gamma-ray emission, PIGE, spectroscopy to measure fluorine in textiles within seconds. This technique could detect all fluorinated chemicals, not just the few dozen commonly tested PFAS compounds. When testing firefighter gear, they found each uniform contained 1.5 pounds of PFAS chemicals that shed at parts per million levels, concerning since PFAS is toxic in blood at parts per billion levels. In 1861 London, 19-year-old Matilda Schurer worked in an artificial flower workshop, dusting green pigment onto fake leaves for fashionable floral headpieces. Her condition deteriorated to a horrific death, vomiting green bile, seeing only green, and finally dying in convulsions while foaming from her mouth, eyes, and nose. Though an inquest ruled it an accident, critics recognized it as industrial negligence. Rather than blame male workshop owners or dye manufacturers, society faulted fashionable women who wore the toxic accessories. The early 1800s marked an exciting frontier in chemistry, with scientists discovering new elements and compounds without fully understanding their health impacts. German chemist August Wilhelm von Hofmann began isolating components from coal tar waste in 1845, turning industrial sludge into valuable chemicals. In 1856, his 18-year-old student, William Perkin, accidentally created a gorgeous purple dye while attempting to synthesize quinine from coal tar. Reports surfaced in British newspapers of bright red, orange, and fuchsia socks causing pain, swelling, skin eruptions, and lameness in wearers. In 1869, French toxicologists demonstrated the danger by extracting coralline dye from socks, injecting it into animals who promptly died, then re-dyeing silk with the dye extracted from a rabbit's stained lungs. The lion dye industry fought back, hiring brothers who dyed their own extremities repeatedly to prove safety. Authorities dismissed reactions as anomalies, beginning the tradition of downplaying chemical sensitivities despite evidence. Mid-1800s mourning fashion introduced another toxic hazard, black mourning crepe. This matte black silk, made from waste silk dyed black and stiffened with chemicals, was immensely profitable for manufacturers, but torturous for women. When wet, the dye stained skin, requiring removal with poisonous oxalic acid. Even more dangerous was nitrobenzene in shoe blacking, which caused methemoglobinemia when absorbed through skin, leading to blue lips, dizziness, and sometimes death. Factory workers suffered most severely from dye toxicity. Aniline dye workers developed anilinism, where red blood cells were destroyed, causing anemia, headaches, tremors, pain, cardiac arrhythmia, and potentially coma. By 1895, German surgeon Ludwig Renn documented bladder cancer clusters in fuchsia dye factories, and by 1921, the International Labor Office confirmed benzidine and beta-naphthalamine, BNA, as the carcinogenic culprits. Candace's devastating fertility journey cost $18,000 on IVF, only to retrieve 14 eggs with just two fertilizing, neither of which implanted. At only 30, she was told she had poor egg quality with little hope. Desperate, she discovered it starts with the egg, learning that diet and detoxification could improve egg quality in the months before ovulation. The assisted reproduction market reached $2.3 billion by 2020, with women showing diminished ovarian reserves increasing 37% from 2004 to 11, and miscarriage rates climbing 1% annually, especially among younger women. By 2017, Shauna Swan's research revealed sperm counts had plummeted over 50% in 40 years, with projections suggesting 41% of men could be infertile by 2050. Endocrine-disrupting chemicals in fashion present a frightening reproductive threat, with concentrations as small as one drop in an Olympic-sized pool capable of crossing the placenta and permanently affecting embryos. Research shows PFAS from treated textiles transfers at parts per million levels, 1,000 times higher than the parts per billion threshold for harm. These exposures can cause phthalate syndrome in male babies when mothers are exposed during weeks 8-12 of pregnancy, and damage can be passed generationally. A 2022 study found 103 harmful chemicals across 9 chemical groups in women's urine samples. While industry continues making regrettable substitutions, like replacing DEHP with DINP or BPA with BPS, alternatives often equally or more toxic. Testing consistently reveals endocrine disruptors in fashion, BPA and polyester spandex socks at 19 times California's safe limit, lead, PFAS, and phthalates in children's clothing, antimony in recycled polyester, and various toxins in face masks, sports bras, and secondhand clothing. Fertility doctors like Ashley Eskew are finding that many patients with fertility issues also have other health conditions like autoimmune thyroiditis, atopic dermatitis, and asthma that often improve when environmental toxins are removed. Candace's story exemplifies this connection. After failing her first round of IVF, she completely detoxified her life by eliminating chemical-laden products, switching to organic food, and removing plastics. In her second attempt years later, after further refinements, including switching to organic underwear, she achieved a 100% fertilization rate, resulting in twins. Chingy Wong, a flight attendant, saw her health dramatically deteriorate after Delta Airlines introduced new Zac Posen design uniforms in 2018. Despite being young with no prior allergies, Chingy developed severe symptoms including nausea, dizziness, heart palpitations, chest redness, memory issues, and eventually adult-onset asthma after wearing the chemical-smelling uniform. Her experience mirrors thousands of flight attendants across multiple airlines who suffered similar reactions to their uniforms. Chingy's life became severely restricted after her chemical sensitivity developed. Grocery stores made her sick, and she had to discard scented products. Her condition, variously called multiple chemical sensitivity, environmental illness, mast cell activation syndrome, or toxicant-induced loss of tolerance, lacks medical consensus and insurance coding. Like human Geiger counters, those with chemical intolerance react violently to everyday toxins that might barely affect others. Chemical intolerance testing is limited to about 80 substances that can fit on a patient's back, despite thousands potentially present in garments. Some practitioners resort to using actual fabric samples for patch tests. Despite being less discussed today than in the 1990s, chemical sensitivity diagnoses increased 300% from 2006 to 2016. Dr. Miller's research using the QESI and BRESI tests on 10,000 Americans found over 20% showed chemical intolerance, matching the percentage of flight attendants reacting to uniforms. At 60, Southwest Airlines flight attendant Tanya Osborne began experiencing painful joints, back pain, migraines, and persistent sinus infections after the airline introduced new polyester uniforms in 2017. When red blotches appeared on her skin, doctors diagnosed her with dye allergies, but Southwest wouldn't allow her to switch uniforms despite medical documentation. By 2021, Tanya had developed psoriatic arthritis and ankylosing spondylitis, autoimmune conditions requiring ongoing medication. Autoimmune diseases share one fundamental trait: the immune system attacks the person's own body, triggered by environmental factors like viruses and toxins. Twin studies suggest these conditions are one-third genetic and two-thirds environmental. Dr. Delisa Fairweather explains that our immune system has two responses: innate, which recognizes and fights toxins, and adaptive, which builds memory of these threats. Mast cells play a crucial role, as they're the only cells that recognize toxins. Through immunological spread, repeated exposure to toxins can cause the body to develop allergies or autoimmune responses to harmless substances associated with those toxins. In Tirupur, India's dollar city, the environmental toll of textile manufacturing became unbearable by the late 1990s. The Noyal River became a dumping ground for untreated effluent from 800 dye houses, creating a toxic lagoon that destroyed nearby farmland. A 2005 report by local schoolgirls documented 77 acres of unusable farmland and nearly 5,000 contaminated wells. Children who swam in the water developed blistered lesions and severe eczema. Beyond water pollution, garment workers face direct chemical exposure. Leela Lati, a 34-year-old garment worker, showed me scarring blisters on her arms and legs from her factory work. Workers commonly suffer from respiratory problems, skin disease, and other health issues from exposure to textile dust, chemicals, and fumes. In the past decade, global regulatory pressure has increased following Greenpeace's bombshell 2011 report that found hazardous chemicals in effluent from Chinese textile mills supplying major Western brands. Their follow-up testing of 141 clothing items from 20 brands found high concentrations of phthalates, carcinogenic amines, and NPEs in two-thirds of the garments. The textile industry operates on a three-tier system that determines chemical safety practices. At the top tier are facilities with eco-credentials, efficient technology, and respectful relationships with European brands. The middle tier consists of export factories working with American brands that care only about meeting minimum legal requirements while prioritizing cost. Most concerning is that test certificates can be manipulated. The bottom tier serves domestic Indian markets with no safety testing or protective equipment. Leela Vati's story perfectly illustrates the contradictions of this tiered system. She initially worked for 7 years sewing cotton shirts for foreign brands in a high-quality factory with proper dust filtration systems. After taking time off to raise her children, she chose a domestic market factory with better hours but worse conditions. This factory had her sewing synthetic garments with azo dispersed dyes with no testing before shipping to Indian consumers. Without air conditioning, the heat made her sweat, while fumes from fabric heated by old sewing machines irritated her nose. She developed blisters and finally had to quit in late 2021. The New York/Newark port jurisdiction is vast, covering from Poughkeepsie to Manasquan Inlet and from the Delaware Water Gap to Long Island's tip. Newark handles 12,000 shipping containers daily, with the largest ships carrying up to 16,000 containers each. My FOIA request to the Consumer Product Safety Commission revealed they test fashion shipments only every couple days, a tiny fraction of the 138,000 daily containers entering America's 9 largest ports. The CPSC primarily tests only children's products for 3 substances: lead, cadmium, and phthalates, a limited scope that barely scratches the surface of potential chemical hazards. The United States maintains a remarkably lax attitude toward toxic chemicals in clothing and accessories compared to other developed nations. As Scott Eccles of ZDHC notes, the general perception is there are laws against all these things, which there aren't. The fundamental issue lies in the battle between risk versus hazard approaches to chemical safety. While hazard represents a chemical's inherent danger, risk combines danger with potential exposure. The risk-based approach used in America might seem reasonable, like allowing mercury in well-made thermometers, but it falls apart with clothing chemicals. When my bookkeeper questioned unusual purchases from brands I'd normally avoid, I explained I was testing them for toxins. When I opened a package containing sparkly tanks and pleather miniskirts, my chemically sensitive friend had an immediate reaction after smelling one item, coughing and feeling phlegmy in her chest. After much negotiation, I selected 5 high-risk items to test: a free gift bag, a foil print collegiate shirt, neon orange translucent heels, a pink faux leather miniskirt, and leather gloves. The cost was staggering, $9,638 for testing products worth about $700. The results were revealing. Only 2 items officially failed, but other items contained concerning chemicals below official limits, including formaldehyde, reproductive toxins DMAC and DMF, and endocrine disruptors. When lab results contradict bodily reactions, we face a fundamental question of trust. The orange heels I tested contained formaldehyde and reproductive toxins that the CDC warns can be absorbed through skin, damage the liver, and increase absorption of other chemicals, yet technically pass testing standards. As Rachel Carson noted in 1962, humans are never exposed to one chemical alone, but to mysterious combinations that can amplify harm. While acknowledging that this task would be easier if companies were required to eliminate toxic chemicals and provide transparency, there are practical steps for reducing chemical exposure through thoughtful consumer choices. Avoid cheap knockoffs, unknown brands, and ultra-fast fashion brands. ZDHC's Scott Eccles warns that unrecognized brands and counterfeit products pose the highest chemical risk. Dropshipping operations, which manufacture products only after orders are placed, resulting in long delivery times, are particularly problematic. Find companies you can trust. Natural materials alone don't guarantee safety. Even white cotton can be processed with harmful chemicals like PFAS that would poison a compost pile. Several mainstream brands have engaged deeply with chemical management for at least a decade, including H&M, Nike, Levi's, Patagonia, and Eileen Fisher. Look for third-party labels from organizations like Affirm Group, Bluesign, GOTS, Okotex, and ZDHC. While acknowledging these voluntary programs aren't perfect guarantees of non-toxicity, they provide useful guidelines for consumers. Go for natural materials whenever possible. Avoid synthetic materials starting with poly, PVC, polyester, polyamide, polyurethane, plus nylon, acrylic, and plasticky elements, as they often contain or require toxic chemicals in production. Instead, choose cotton, silk, hemp, cashmere, linen, wool, alpaca, rayon, lyocell, and modal. Avoid performance materials like water and stain repellency, wrinkle resistance, and easy care features, which typically involve toxic chemicals, including PFAS. Embrace natural care methods like steaming and ironing instead. Avoid supersaturated, ultra-bright, or neon colors. For those with sensitive skin, choose whites, creams, and muted earth tones. Natural and plant-based dyes are ideal. Always wash new clothing before wearing to remove contaminants like fungicides, biocides, pesticides, fragrances, and loose dyes. Use only unscented laundry products. Research shows scented detergents, fabric softeners, and dryer sheets emit numerous volatile organic compounds, including carcinogens that aren't listed on labels. Don't dry clean your clothing. Traditional dry cleaning uses tetrachloroethylene, PERC, a toxic chemical that affects the nervous system, liver, kidneys, and immune system. Many dry clean-only labels are merely suggestions. Buy secondhand or swap clothing. Secondhand clothing has already been washed multiple times and off-gassed its finishes. Garage sales, buy-nothing groups, and clothing swaps offer affordable, sustainable options while building community. Trust your nose. If something smells like chemicals, return it immediately for a refund. PFAS chemicals remain persistent in the environment, though scientists have discovered that sodium hydroxide, lye, may help break them down. Recent legislation shows progress, with California banning PFAS in textiles starting in 2025. Meanwhile, microplastics from synthetic clothing have been found in human blood, placentas, and lungs, with one study linking them to inflammatory bowel disease. The improper disposal of clothing continues to cause harm globally, with garment waste being burned in Cambodia and Ghana, releasing toxic smoke into communities. According to Maxine Badat's book, Unraveled, Americans threw away nearly 12.8 million tons of clothes and shoes in 2017. Even donated clothing often ends up as waste. The Salvation Army's largest New York store sells only 8% of donations. The United States exports over 1 billion pounds of used clothing annually, with the US, UK, and Germany accounting for 40% of global secondhand clothing exports. Much of this clothing goes to Ghana's Kontamanto market, where quality has been declining dramatically. An estimated 77 tons of unsold clothing is collected 6 days weekly for landfills, representing only 25% of the market's waste. Another 15% is illegally dumped in waterways, buried on beaches, or burned. This vast chemical web is a hyperobject, something too pervasive and huge to fully comprehend. Despite this overwhelming reality, there is hope. We can value our health above trends, seek secondhand items, choose natural fibers, and spread awareness about these issues. The fashion industry is slowly changing with increasing transparency and chemical management. By making conscious choices and demanding better from brands, we can protect ourselves and future generations from fashion's toxic legacy.